good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of September 20th, 2015. Good heavens, it's been such a day, such a week. I'm glad to be here for Information Week Live. Now, if you are listening to this, the odds are good you're listening to it in an on-demand streaming version. The reason I can say that with some confidence is that we're having some technical problems with our radio page at informationweek.com. We apologize for that. Our developers are working on it full-time right now, and we hope that everything will be just fine very soon. But we're going to go ahead and have a great show regardless. I have a superb couple of guests here to join me in our virtual studio. We have Dave Wagner, the executive editor for Community here at Information Week. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks, Kurt.
And Kelly Sheridan. And Kelly, I forget what flavor of editor you are right now. I wanted to say a senior editor, but I'm not sure that that's right. Whatever it is, you are the person who covers Microsoft like the dew. The people in Redmond cannot make a move without you knowing about it, and we welcome you to Information Week Live.
Hi there, Kurt. Thanks for having me. And I'm associate editor for Information Week.
Associate editor, thank you very much for that. I will sit there and staple that information to the front of my computer, thereby voiding all my warranties. Well, we really have a couple of weeks to catch up with, because last week we did not have an episode of Information Week Live. And one of the reasons for that is that lots and lots of our editors were at Dreamforce. This is the annual gathering of the Salesforce using community. And Dave, I know you were at Dreamforce. How was it? Was the energy high? Was it an exciting place? Tell us about Dreamforce last week.
The energy was certainly high. The Salesforce crew did a great job. They actually closed off a main street in San Francisco and covered it in a very nice artificial grass so that they created an impromptu park. My favorite moment from that is I actually heard someone yell, I heard a Salesforce volunteer yell, "Hey, you two people having the important business meeting, get out of the way of the hula hoop contest." So that was clearly the vibe they were going for. But Mark Benioff, obviously director and founder of Salesforce, started off his keynote with a very interesting sentence, which was, "Welcome to the Internet of the Customer." So he said, we're no longer even thinking about the Internet of Things. We're no longer thinking about the Internet. We're at the Internet of the Customer. And what he meant by that is that he believes that Salesforce and the Internet of Things and the cloud and mobile have converged in a way that allow us to finally reach that nirvana of one-to-one relationships between companies and their customers. And he was very excited about this. He quoted some interesting statistics saying that right now only 1% of enterprise customers have actually been analyzed using big data and analytics techniques. But, of course, if you use his product, that will no longer be true. They introduced some interesting analytics products there. But the whole basis of the week was to talk about this new one-to-one relationship between companies and customers that is both a little frightening and a little creepy, but also truly exciting.
Well, now, I have heard a lot of things about the one-to-one relationship as they involve the products. And one of the phrases we keep hearing over and over again is mass customization. But it sounds like with Salesforce involved, that this is more involving the relationship with the customer than in the products that are delivered to the customer? Or were they talking about the entire chain of relationship from initial contact right through to product delivery?
All of the above. I think that because their sales force, their point of view, of course, is from customer to sale. But really, they were talking about the reason why the customer to sale relationship was possible is because of the new relationship the customer is having with the IoT and mobile. So, for instance, their first partner in one of these new analytics is Microsoft, as Kelly probably knows very well herself. Microsoft is going to work with Salesforce to do one-to-one marketing in relation to their products. So an example that was given at the keynote is that, say, you download Office 365, but you didn't load a specific plugin that they think you would be interested in. Microsoft will now be able to identify all of the people who downloaded Office 365 but didn't download this plugin, and send them a message saying, hey, we think this plugin is for you, we think this is a great idea, and here's why, because we've seen you do X, Y, and Z with Office 365 already. And so the idea is that this kind of flexibility and data control that we're now getting with our online products is going to allow us to either better serve or bug, depending on your point of view, our customers into new products.
Well, now, it's interesting that you mention the tie to Microsoft. Kelly, from what you've been following and seeing at Microsoft, is this idea of the better relationship and the relationship through plugins something that seems to be taking hold in Redmond as well, or is this all coming from third parties like Salesforce?
I saw one really interesting announcement that came from Salesforce. I tried to stay on top of all the announcements, and this is the one that really stuck out to me in terms of Microsoft, is that for the business, they're starting to use Cortana as a voice interface for businesses so that you can ask Cortana a question and the Cortana will interpret the question and generate business information. So let's say you ask Cortana, show me my most at-risk opportunities. Cortana will take a machine learning and process that question and generate an answer. In terms of what Microsoft announced at Salesforce, I think that was one of the more interesting things that came out of it.
Yeah, and I was at that demo where Satya Nadella showed that off, and there were some hiccups, unfortunately, but I don't think they were his fault. I think it was the ambient noise in the room, but it didn't understand him right away. But they were able to fix it on the stage, and it was impressive. And it seemed to be part of Nadella's larger vision that he laid out on the stage for a technological experience that transcended device. One of the things that he was very adamant about is that he no longer cares what device or software is running on the device as much as he cares about the experience. So obviously he expects Microsoft software to be on everything from your iPhone to your Surface tablet. But what he really wants more than anything is a seamless personal experience. And Cortana is a lot at the center of that in his mind, because it's one of the ways we're going to start interacting with Microsoft regardless of the device we're using, in his mind at least.
You know, it's interesting that between Cortana and Siri and whatever it is that Google is calling their assistant, we're reaching a point where, to a certain extent, the computer or the intelligence of the system really is something that's just out there, because all of these go back and touch the cloud. They go back, and when you talk to them, they in turn phone home to do all of the magic that they do. And so we're getting to a situation where it's, you know, the interface that you have with a particular device, whether you're sitting at a desk or standing on a train as you commute in or doing whatever you're doing with a watch, it's all just an interface back to this vast amorphous computing cloud. It's looking more and more like Satya Nadella is some kind of a forward-thinking genius, unless I miss something important. Kelly, is that the impression that people around Microsoft are giving you when you talk to them?
Absolutely. Cloud and mobile technology actually are core to Nadella's vision of how Microsoft is going to proceed going forward. And I think the Cortana Analytics suite that he demonstrated at Salesforce is just one component of that. Like you mentioned, Nadella's goal is to have Microsoft services running on every device. He doesn't care what device it is. They actually just released a new mobile app. It's just an email app. It helps you schedule meetings amongst a group of people. And they released it for iOS first. So right now, this app that Microsoft created is only available for iPhone. It's not available for Android. It's not available for Windows Phone. So, and I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, they just released a new iPhone today. So there are a whole bunch of people picking up iPhones and downloading apps and exploring their new devices. So they're really trying to broaden their reach. And I think they're doing that in a very strategic way by targeting products from different makers.
Right. You know, it seems to be the differentiator, really, between Microsoft and Apple right now. Is obviously, Apple has a cloud, but frankly, Apple is a device company still. Whereas Microsoft, because it's been a software company its entire existence, the cloud, it makes much more sense for Microsoft. And Microsoft, I think, is actually going to go around Apple. The device, again, is going to stop becoming as important as it was. You know, when the iPhone was first made, the cloud was still in its infancy, and the device was important. And what Microsoft realized is that was a pendulum, and it swung to the device for a short period of time, but it's swinging back to software because of the cloud. And it's really smart. I think they basically, whether they did it on purpose or not, they did an end around Apple, and they're in front of Apple again.
Well, I think they may be in front of Apple, but I also think they're beside Apple. You know, at the most recent, the iPhone 6S release party, Microsoft was right there on stage.
Yeah.
So you get the strong impression that the folks up in Redmond would be entirely happy if lots and lots of people went out and bought Macs and iPhones and Apple Watches, as long as they're using those systems to reach back into the Microsoft cloud.
Exactly. Yes.
It's almost getting back to a phrase that Ray Norda came up with a long, long time ago when he was chairman at Novell, the whole notion of coopetition.
Right. The difference is, from Microsoft's point of view, I think, and Kelly, correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think they see a future that's not that far away where the phone becomes a commodity again, that Apple's selling iPhones at a premium because people still are under the perception that a top phone is required to gain all of these benefits. I think Microsoft sees a future that's not far away, 3 years, 5 years at most, where the phone becomes a commodity like the PC again, where we're not having to get a new phone every year to feel like we have the most powerful phone, that the cloud is powering our phone. And when the phone itself becomes a commodity, being in the premium phone business is not necessarily a great place to be. Being in the cloud business and the software business is the smart place to be.
I would completely agree with that. And I think Microsoft kind of has an edge here. I mean, look at the devices that Apple just unveiled at their most recent event. They put the most expensive business tablet that money can buy on stage, and they paired it with a stylus that you have to pay an extra $100 for. And I think for more and more people, if you already have a tablet, you don't need a giant tablet. You don't need, like, the subtle innovations of the next tablet upgrade. You know, you need the new software. You just need to be connected to the cloud, but you don't necessarily need the most high-end device on the market. And granted, there will be a select population that will want the latest phone and the latest tablet, but I think that number of people is going to get smaller and smaller as time goes on.
Well, we've been talking about 2 weeks ago all the stuff that was going on at Dreamforce. How about this week? As we've all mentioned, we've got the 6 Plus, I mean, sorry, the 6S that was released to the public in celebration of the Pope's visit, as everything seems to be right now. But was anything else going on this week? Kelly, in your part of the world, did anything catch your eye in particular this week?
A couple of things did. I keep a close eye on Microsoft, and they released the full version of Office 2016 for Windows this week. So that was pretty exciting. It became available to the majority of Office 365 users. If you use Office 365 Pro Plus accounts or use a volume licensing agreement, you have to wait till October 1st. But most people got Office 2016 earlier this week, and that was interesting because all of the apps have been upgraded with a more closer focus on collaboration. So there's different tools within, like, Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel, PowerPoint, that'll help you interact with your colleagues or with your friends. Skype for Business is built into each individual app now, and there are different tools that'll make it easier for you to get information. For example, if you're using Microsoft Word and you need to look up information on an article you're writing or something like that, you can type a question, and it'll this feature is called Tell Me, and so a Bing search will be conducted, and it'll just, like, bring information onto your screen from the Internet. So a bunch of features like that was cool. And then the president of China paid a visit to Microsoft this week as well, and they had a whole bunch of announcements about new partnership with different Chinese companies. Some were focused on the cloud, some were focused on Windows 10. So towards the end of the week, things got pretty exciting for Microsoft.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about all of the features of 2016. Now, I've been using 2016 because in my personal life, we are Office 365 subscribers, and I like it. I like it better than any set of Windows Office productivity tools that I've used in a while. But like a lot of people, there are a ton of these features that I looked at for the longest time and said, why on earth would anyone need that? Until I went to graduate school a few years ago, in which case the entire thing made sense. All of the features, all of the great ways to roll things together, they are ideal if you are trying to put together a paper for publication in a peer-reviewed journal. And I wonder if some of this isn't Microsoft's secret push to raise the level of education and knowledge in the U.S. Dave, now, I know you've got more than a passing knowledge of the world of academia. What do you think about that? Is the current version of Office the tool that you would have loved when you were a grad student?
I'm sure I would have. As noble a cause as that sounds, I think it's probably a byproduct. I think probably what they were doing is they were listening to power users, and power users come in a few varieties, right? They come in academics, they come in graphic design and publishing, and they come in a few other places, right? So it makes sense that they would be listening to their power users, and that's great. But I think it actually goes back to something, I'm sorry if I'm lost 2 weeks ago, but it seems that I just saw Satya Nadella talk. It's fresh on my mind. Something that Satya Nadella said during his presentation, which is, he said there's one thing, there's one resource that is scarce in the enterprise no matter what we do, and that's time. He says, if my products can give you the gift of time, I've given you something that nobody else can do, right? And what I think is going on here more than anything is that they're seeing the hundreds of clicks a day we do going back and forth from one window to the next, do searches here and do searches there, and they're really, really realizing that that comes up to real time. And that what if we can take all of that and combine it into a more contained area with fewer clicks working in a single space, that they can give back the gift of time. And he wasn't the only one who said that. Nadella wasn't the only one. CEO of Uber said something similar, which was that time is a luxury that you can't buy. And Mark Benioff also mentioned time a lot in his speech. So I think what we're seeing maybe, and this would be wonderful because I don't think we've seen it in recent years, is a humanification or a rehumanizing of technology. And yes, those words are trademarked. You can't have them. And a rehumanizing of technology through an understanding that computing power is essentially free now. Computing power is essentially so cheap because of the cloud that we can't sell on computing power anymore. So what can we sell on? We can sell on giving you back your time.
You know, I like that, the idea that that the time is the critical thing. And in a real way, I think this is just continuing the evolution we've seen in computing since the beginning. The early days were of a machine that was so expensive and whose resources were so costly that we went to see it and we rearranged our work lives around the needs of the automating system and the intelligent system. And for the last 30, 35 years, we've seen a steady movement of the computing power becoming cheaper, human activity becoming more valuable, until, as you say, the computing power is now, until you get to it in just ferocious amounts, essentially free, whereas we're working to make the human aspect as efficient and effective as possible. It's an interesting state of events, and one that's not showing any signs of slowing down. I'm frankly looking forward to this continuing on these trend lines for a long time to come. So we're coming down towards the end of our show today, and we've got a lot of these themes that are rolling around, and I think it's going to be interesting because we're getting ready in a couple of weeks to go to another one of these big sort of high concept events, and I'm talking about the Gartner Symposium. Dave, I know you and I will both be there at the Swan and Dolphin covering the event, and I'm sure that UBM Tech will have other folks there. But looking back at the past few years, I have to believe that we're going to see sort of more explication of these trends there. I'm already starting to see lots and lots of press releases and requests for meetings. Dave, are you getting any sense of the kind of thing we're likely to see there in Orlando in a couple of weeks?
Yes. I don't know for sure what Gartner has in mind, although I think I could make some guesses, but I'm basically getting requests from only two major categories of product. People want to talk to me about the Internet of Things, and they want to talk to me about security. That is what I'm getting the most of by far. And I think some of that has to do with what's hot. I mean, security is never going to go away. But I think the other reason that's happening is Gartner, as you know, the last couple of years has spent a huge amount of its keynote time and its analyst time on the Internet of Things. I don't think that's stopping. And as we just talked about earlier today, that data push from the IoT is part of what we're seeing is the change in the way business is relating to its customer. So I suspect we're going to hear from Gartner even more on the Internet of Things. I suspect we're going to hear a lot about how to turn data into business, which is the thing we've been struggling with so much in the last few years. I did, back at Interop earlier this year, I did a town hall meeting with CIOs, and all of them said, we have no problem dealing with data. We have all the data we need, and we have all the data, and we know how to handle the data. What we haven't been able to do is turn data into business. So my expectation is that that's going to be the major theme at Gartner. Maybe you've had a different perception.
No, that goes with much of what I'm seeing, although I would add some nuance to that. One of the things that I have noticed, and this was true and very apparent earlier this year at SAP's Sapphire conference, what most of us think of when we talk about the Internet of Things is wearables and consumer devices. What some of these big enterprise back-end players are talking about is something entirely different. When you talk about putting an intelligent electric meter on every house that a utility serves, when you talk about putting sensors and control systems on manufacturing floors, when you talk about putting heavy sensor loads on transportation systems, those are all the sorts of things that the SAPs and other, the Oracles, the other big enterprise backends are talking about when they talk about the Internet of Things. And that's where I think a lot of the progress is really going to be coming, because there are some tremendous financial incentives for making those work. If we get the IoT in consumer stuff, that's great. But I think that's going to be one of the folds that comes out of the tent pole that is industrial IoT. And I suspect we're going to be hearing a bit about that at Gartner in a couple of weeks, because to me that's an important distinction to make.
Agreed. Do you remember 2 years ago their focus was on the city of the future? Right. That was they envisioned how does the city change as a way of showing how the IoT can be used as a business tool. And there was very little in the way of consumer products in that discussion. It was very much about a connected city as almost as an industrial complex. And I thought it was very interesting. I think that is definitely where Gartner is headed. And that makes sense, because we can control that data 100% in the enterprise, right? You put a sensor on a truck or on your assembly line or anywhere along that lines, nobody's going to say you're creepy. You put a sensor on somebody's refrigerator, and you're going to have a discussion about your limits. So it makes total sense to be starting from an industrial point of view, from a city point of view, and work your way to the customer later.
Well, we're talking about intelligent cities and the Internet of Things and all of the big ideas that live in the world of IT, but We're going to have to continue the discussion on the pages of Information Week and next Friday for Information Week Live. But before we sign off, I want to go around the virtual table here and find out what we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about and what you've got coming up. Kelly, I want to start with you. Was there anything that you really wanted to mention that you think deserves mention? And can you give us a preview of some of the stuff you've got coming up next week?
Sure. One announcement that I didn't really touch on was something that came out yesterday. Microsoft made a partnership with Baidu. I'm actually not entirely sure how to pronounce that, but it is the Chinese answer to Google, essentially. And through the partnership, Baidu has like 600 million users. The search giant is going to put a Windows 10 Express button on their homepage, and in exchange, Microsoft will sacrifice Bing and make Baidu the default homepage and search engine for their Windows 10 computers in China. And I just thought that was interesting and worth mentioning because companies like Google have tried to break into the Chinese market and failed to do so, but it seems like Microsoft really has some potential there. In terms of what I'm looking forward to next week, we have the Windows 10 hardware launch coming up the first week of October. So I'm looking forward to see if we get any more details on the devices that we're going to see during that, and that'll happen the week after next.
Very good. And for information on all the articles that are coming out and what you're doing, how do we follow you on social media, on the Tweety Pipes and other things where you let people know what you're doing?
You can find me on Twitter at Kelly Sheridan, that's KellySheridan, 22. And yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter, so you can find me there.
Very good. Well, Kelly, thanks so much for being with us today, and please pardon my butchering of your title earlier.
Oh, don't worry about it. Thanks, Kurt. Thank you for having me.
Well, Dave, I'm going to try not to butcher your title, but I would love to know if there was something. We didn't actually get to talk about the geek end today. It's normally a big part of what we do. Can you give people a little tease of what they ought to go and look for on the geek end?
Yeah, sure. Telepathy and making people who have not been able to walk due to injury be able to walk again, both using the same general idea of interpreting brainwaves. And so we were talking earlier about the gift of time. We may be seeing computers giving the gift of mobility, which is pretty darn cool.
That is exceptionally cool. Everybody, as soon as we're through with radio, go over and read the Geek End. It's a great thing to do. It'll put you in a great mood for the weekend that's about to start. And Dave, once the weekend is over, what are you going to be doing for the coming week?
Yeah, I have what I think is going to be a really great story on the hot IT jobs for 2016. The 15 job titles that can expect to be most in demand and see the largest raises. And there are some obvious ones on there, but there are some big surprises, too. You'll be shocked by the job, I think, that is going to be most in demand and can expect to see a 9% raise next year, according to Robert Half Technology. So if you're looking to see if your job is safe and you're going to be earning more money next year, that is a must read.
Well, if there's a 9% raise involved, I've definitely got to go look at that.
Well, you're qualified to do that job, Kurt, so check it out.
Way cool. And tell us, you know, when all these things come out, how can we find you and follow you on the social media?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at GeekEndDave. That's like weekend with a G. And you can find me, obviously, on Information Week and also on allanalytics.com.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate you taking time to join us here on Information Week Live.
Yeah, always happy to see you, and I'll see you a couple weeks in Florida.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. Well, as for me, last weekend I spent 3 days with my journalistic brethren at the SPJ, Society for Professional Journalists Convention, which happened to be in Orlando, learning all kinds of new ways that people are telling stories, ways to use the technologies. And I've got some ideas about ways that I want to be telling stories coming up. So be prepared in the next few weeks to see things from me on services like Periscope. I think that's going to be fun, doing some video. I'm planning to do some of that from Gartner. Also going to be making better use, I hope, of Twitter and the other social media, because according to everyone down there, that is where things are happening. And I'm also going to be seeing just how much of some upcoming conferences I can cover using my phone as my primary journalistic tool. So that should be interesting for everyone concerned. Now, for the basic information on this and sort of my social media hub, look for me on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. Well, Information Week Live will be back again next Friday, as we are every Friday. If you are listening to this in an on-demand version, first, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. And second, plan to be with us when we broadcast live. We had some technical problems today, although our crack development team was able to dive in and solve them in, about 12 minutes. So I give them full credit for that. But be with us, because there is a great online conversation that happens around all of the discussion that's happening here on the air. We'd love to have your voice in that online conversation. So please plan to join us Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here at Information Week. Well, for Kelly Sheridan, Dave Wagner, and all of us here at Information Week Live, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thank you for being with us, and hey, I'll see you next time.